So we'll start with Madame Bersigo. She has a book titled The Ministry of Women in the Church, and devotes a chapter in that book to the writings of the Church Fathers. And in that chapter, she has a section titled A Double Creation, sort of dedicated to St. Gregory of Nyssa. And the double creation theory is one that's generally attributed to St. Gregory of Nyssa. Madame Bersigo did not make this up. She actually was using what was already the common understanding of St. Gregory of Nyssa's theology when she wrote this chapter. And so the double creation theory is that before the act of creation, God has in his mind the total and universal man. And this total and universal man is not just an idea, but it's mysteriously the sum total of all human persons gathered into one. But it's only when God creates humankind that humankind becomes incarnate as men and women. And St. Gregory of Nyssa's supposed theory is that God does this only in anticipation of the fall. He knows that Adam and Eve are going to sin. They're going to be cut off from the life of God, and that they're going to need means of procreation that will continue to function even after they're severed from the life of God, and they're no longer in the Garden of Eden. So he gives them this animalistic characteristic of sexual differentiation, so that once they're out in the fallen world, the human race is not going to go extinct. An implication of this is that then, since the total universal man before the act of creation doesn't necessarily include men and women as such, then after the second coming, when we're in the end times, and there's no longer a need for procreation because the human race will have reached its fullness, then that characteristic, that animal characteristic of sexual differentiation, which only serves the purpose of procreation, that falls away. It's no longer needed. And so that's the dual creation theory of St. Gregory of Nyssa. It's commonly attributed to him. And I'll just mention that Madame Bersigo has mixed reactions to this dual creation. She kind of likes it, on the one hand, because she wants some support for arguing that there's no real difference between men and women. And with a dual creation theory, there's no theological or spiritual significance to sex. It's just for procreation. So there's no theological reason to stop women from being ordained. But on the other hand, she sort of doesn't like it because she spends a lot of effort in her writings trying to validate the experience, the goodness of being a woman. And the dual creation theory is kind of tough when you want to do that, because if there's really no significance to being a woman other than procreation, then there's nothing special about being a woman, essentially. And she also points out that there's kind of a spiritual dualism flavor in this dual creation theory, where like the spirit is good and the body's bad. And she especially points to the ascetic monastic tradition in the Orthodox Church, in which there are a lot of comments that you can come across in the writings of the Desert Fathers, in which women seem to be the incarnation of temptation. And Madame Bersigo perceives a lot of these comments to be implying that for women to become holy, they have to cease being female. And he points in particular to a comment that St. Gregory of Nyssa makes in regards to his sister Macrina, saying that he could no longer call her a woman because she was raised above nature by her holy life. And so for Madame Bersigo, there seems to be this sort of masculine elite attitude that women have to cease becoming female in order to be holy. Which kind of fits in with the double creation theory of, you know, in the resurrection, sex itself sort of falls away. Moving on to Father Thomas Hopko. Father Hopko also reads St. Gregory in the same way. You know, he accepts the dual creation theory. There are a lot of texts that seem to support that in St. Gregory of Nyssa. But he doesn't like it. And he actually argues that since the texts in regards to the nature of men and women in the writing of the Church Fathers are relatively scattered. You know, they're not really treatises that have been written just on the nature of men and women. It's kind of something that the Fathers touch upon in passing while they're talking about other things. St. Gregory talks about it maybe more than most other Church Fathers, but you know, it's just kind of a side issue that pops up here and there. And Father Thomas Hopko says that this limited treatment of human sexual duality is, and I quote, at best unclear and at worst incompatible with the biblical and sacramental witness of the Church and dogmatic and canonical traditions. So he sees that dual creation theory in St. Gregory of Nyssa and some of the other comments that one finds in other patristic sources, and he just says, this is not consistent with the general tradition of the Church, and therefore, we're just going to put them aside. And he actually develops a theological schematic that is almost independent of the patristic sources, and I'll deal with that a little bit later, talk about exactly what he does say about the nature of men and women. But in essence, he just puts the patristic sources to one side and says we can't pay attention to them. Now, in contrast to Father Thomas Hopko, Sister Nona Verna Harrison goes to the patristic sources as the authoritative voice of the Church on the nature of men and women. And she has an article titled Male and Female in Cappadocian Theology that has been so influential in this conversation that all of the other authors that I used in the study cite this article that she wrote. So she's done some really extensive work with the patristic sources. And she also sees that dual creation theory in St. Gregory of Nyssa and accepts that since man is made in God's image and has to be a reflection of God's attributes, albeit in created form, then sex in man can only be temporary, and it's not essential to the image of God. And sexual duality belongs to actually a whole package of animalistic characteristics in man that are going to pass away. They're temporary features of the human condition. And in particular, Sister Nona points to some statements St. Gregory makes in regards to what the body will be like in the resurrection. And she understands St. Gregory to state that the procreative function that we have now in the resurrection is going to be transformed because God is going to function as a male in relation to the entire human race, and that all human souls will function as females, and this is done in the sense that God gives his life to his creation, to humanity. Humanity receives that life and then gives birth to the virtues. So that's how she understands St. Gregory to understand the procreative function to exist in the end times. Then Dr. Valerie Karras essentially agrees with Madame Bear Siegel and Sister Nona Verna Harrison in understanding the dual creation theory and accepting it as, you know, the voice of St. Gregory of Nyssa. And Dr. Valerie Karras actually will generalize that dual creation theory to the Greek fathers as a whole. And she also develops a little bit more detail around the history of mankind. So she identifies these five stages of existence for the human creation. There's the prehistory, so that's the total universal man in God's mind. And then there's our prelapsarian history, so between creation and the fall. And there's postlapsarian BC, so between the fall and the advent of Christ. And then postlapsarian AD, so after the resurrection. And then there's the end times. And she generalizes the understanding of the church fathers as a whole to say that none of them conceived of human sexuality as an immutable element that transcended all five stages of human existence. So she goes quite a bit further, and she's not just talking about St. Gregory at this point. She actually will say none of the church fathers believe that our sexual duality exists in all five stages of our existence. But she does take a little bit of time to explore the relationship between the image of God and the human body. And again, she describes the general patristic opinion to be that the physical aspect of our human nature has little or nothing to do with God. God doesn't have form. So to say that our human bodies are somehow a reflection of God imposes a form on the Godhead. But at the same time, she recognizes that the Cappadocian fathers in particular recognized a psychosomatic unity of the human person, which means that we've got body, mind, and soul. And the Cappadocian fathers recognized that those three things weren't just like glued together in the human person. You can't pull them apart and deal with them separately. That they're mingled together in a mysterious way. And so even though we can identify them by these different names, they're not the same thing, they're not just welded into one and could be, like retaken apart. Which brings a little bit more complexity to understanding, how the human body is part or not a part of the image of God in humanity. Now, Father John Baer, the final author, he draws actually much more heavily on this appreciation of the body in a significant departure from our other four authors. So, Father John Baer published an article titled The Rational Animal in 1999. And in this article, he's focusing exclusively on St. Gregory of Nyssa's text on the making of man. And when Father John Baer reads this text, he believes that St. Gregory is not stating his understanding of sexual differentiation in straightforward terms. St. Gregory actually has a phrase at the beginning of this text in which he warns his readers that he is going to be imagining the truth by conjectures and images. He's going to be sort of going in a roundabout way talking about his subject matter. And while most readers of St. Gregory of Nyssa take this as a way of the saint saying, this is all very nebulous subject matter. We can't know for sure what we're talking about, but I'm just making some speculations. That's the way most people read that statement of St. Gregory of Nyssa. But Father John Baer thinks that the saint is telling his readers, you have to pay attention, because I'm not just going to say what I think. I'm going to be making a very subtle argument, and you have to bring all of your powers to bear in order to follow along with me. But if you do, you'll see exactly what I'm trying to say. And so with that approach to the text, Father John Baer sees St. Gregory as postulating the human person as the midpoint of creation. The human person is a bridge between the spiritual world and the animal world. And we have our physical characteristics, including our sexual duality, and we have our spiritual aspects, and it's the job of humanity to elevate the animal physical world by channeling our spiritual nature. And so by doing that, we infuse the animal physical world with the divine. And that's the purpose of human beings. So with that perspective, sexuality or sexual differentiation may have been intended to be angelic in the sense that it was going to be exercised under the full autonomy of reason, the spiritual side of our nature. But the fall rendered our sexual differentiation and all the other animalistic characteristics of our nature into passions. And it's then the passions that mankind has to overcome, not the animal characteristics of our nature themselves. So that's sort of the crucial point that Father John Baer's making, whereas the other four authors understand St. Gregory of Nyssa to be saying the animal characteristic of our nature, including sexual differentiation, that in and of itself is unessential to the image of God, and it's going to pass away in some manner in the resurrection. But Father John Baer understands St. Gregory to be saying it's not the characteristics themselves that are going to pass away, it's our experience of them as passions that's going to pass away. The characteristics themselves are immutable. They're part of who we are. So language becomes really important in Father John Baer's reading of St. Gregory. And in particular, he points to the way that St. Gregory uses the word irrational. And in many places in this text on the making of man, St. Gregory uses the word irrational to talk about that animal part of our nature, that whole package of physical characteristics that we're called to elevate through channeling the spiritual side of our nature. And the spiritual side of our nature he calls rational. So we have this rational, irrational juxtaposition. But the irrational is not a negative term. It's just describing part of God's creation, which is in itself good. It's just not the same as the rational part of our nature, because the irrational part of our nature is changeable. Everything in that package is subject to change, whereas the rational part of our nature is constant. It's the divine element. But then, sometimes within the same sentence, St. Gregory will use the word irrational to talk about the passions. The passions are irrational. And so he's making a play on words constantly throughout this article. And Father John Baer sees that play on words as the fundamental reason why so many people have a misconception of what St. Gregory of Nyssa is trying to say about sexual duality in the human race. If you don't understand the way he's using the words rational and irrational and these two completely different meanings, then you're going to miss his understanding of the human person. So, actually, one of the sisters was asking me earlier today about the text, I believe it's in St. Luke, where Christ is talking to the Sadducees, and he says, you know, in paradise, they will neither marry nor be given in marriage, but they will be like the angels. And so with the first four authors, if you put that text and you're wearing the glasses of the dual creation theory, it seems like Christ is saying they will neither marry nor be given in marriage. You're going to be like the angels. There's no such thing as male or female in the angelic state. It's just gone. But if you're wearing the glasses of Saint Gregory, with Father John Baer's reading, then what Christ is saying is that our need for procreation that arises from the fear of death, that is what goes away in paradise. But Father John Baer believes that St. Gregory means essentially uncommitted about how the sex of persons is going to be transformed on the final day.